Before I had this procedure done that I mentioned, medical procedure, I took the opportunity, because I knew I'd be laid up for a while, I took the opportunity to visit some relatives out of state. And it was an easy trip, but after being around other people 24/7 and standing in lines at airports, I was pretty happy to come home and walk in my front door. It felt like a refuge. I set down my bag, took a shower to wash off the road, and I plopped down in a chair and just sat for a while, letting go of all the small stresses of travel. I was home. I was grateful that mindfulness allowed me to take in that felt experience of coming home. As I relaxed body and mind, I appreciated what a refuge home is. When I'm out and about, whether I'm traveling or just running errands around town, I'm subconsciously on higher alert, watchful for the unexpected. When I come home, I'm in familiar territory, and I don't need to be so alert. I pretty much know what to expect. When the refrigerator motor flips on, I don't jump. It's a familiar sound. So try paying attention, being mindful the next time you come home, and notice any effect it has on the body and the mind. For many of us, this is a feeling of refuge. It's a safe place where we can relax and let go. I know that this is not the case for everyone. Sometimes where we live is a place of stress and cause for tension rather than relaxation. But home, as a place of refuge, can be anywhere. If you're traveling and staying in a hotel somewhere, returning to your room after a busy day out and about feels like refuge. I can only imagine that when an unhoused person returns to their tent, it must feel like refuge. What's important is not the location of home, but the ability to actually experience a sense of refuge, of peace, of safety. The Buddha emphasized the importance of refuge and pointed out that it's more a state of mind than a physical place. The real refuge is the peace and serenity of mind that he taught us to cultivate, which is available to us wherever we are if we know how to tap into it. Indeed, he encouraged this in his monastic followers when he told them to leave home and become itinerant wanderers as he was, in order to reinforce this lesson. At home, everything is in its familiar place and there are not too many surprises. But out in the world, our reptilian brain kicks in and we are on high alert for hazards. A friend of mine likes to joke, danger lurking everywhere. She says it all the time. Cognitive scientists and meditation teachers point out that this anxiety can be a habit of mind if we're not careful. It can become a habit of mind. One goal of meditation practice is to provide easy access to a sense of refuge, of peace, no matter where we are or what's going on. A busy airport can be a great place to practice. In the instructions, I refer to Ajahn Amaro's simple meditation instruction, which I just love. He said, rest in the peace and ease that is the natural peace and ease of body and mind. While I was away, I stayed with a relative who is about 10 years older than me. And her son had given her an iPad, but she had no idea how to use it. I spent some time showing her how it worked, and initially she kept getting confused because after scrolling through a few pages or switching apps, she didn't know how to get back to where she started. I showed her that there was a home button that simply brought her back to the home page, no matter where she had wandered. And once she located the home button, she lost most of her fear about getting lost. She just got uncomfortable. She got comfortable with having an iPad. She said, "Oh, that's easy." And it occurred to me at the time that this is what we do in meditation practice. Mindfulness is the home button. If we can just remember to be mindful, we can come home at any time. In this context, it's interesting to note that the Pali word for mindfulness, which is sati, shares the same root as our word for remembering. Mindfulness, then, mindfulness is remembering to pay attention wherever you are, remembering that you are aware. Sharon Salzberg notes that mindfulness is the ultimate mobile device. You can use it anywhere, anytime, unobtrusively. I like to think of that quote sometimes when I'm riding a city bus. I'm using my mindfulness mobile device and nobody knows. Our ability to pay attention, our awareness, is always accessible. It's right here. And when we cultivate this quality of attention, the present moment becomes our refuge. We only need to gently turn toward our experience with interest and acceptance. Whatever is going on in our experience is simply like this. The Tibetan teacher Mingyur Rinpoche says that the insight that the Buddha discovered is so simple and yet so difficult to accept. His teachings introduce us to a dormant, hidden, unrealized part of ourselves. This is the great paradox of the Buddhist path, that we practice in order to know what we already are, therefore attaining nothing, getting nothing, going nowhere. We seek to uncover what has already been here all along. We are already home. We just don't appreciate it because we get lost in wanting things to be other than they are. I've always thought that The Wizard of Oz is a great Dharma story. Dorothy dreams about a better world. And then she leaves on a long journey, seeking it out and experiencing many wonders and overcoming obstacles. And eventually, she finds it all overwhelming. But Glinda the Good Witch points out that she has a home button. All she has to do is click her heels and repeat, "There's no place like home. There's no place like home." In the Four Quartets, T.S. Eliot said, "We shall not cease from exploration, and the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know the place for the first time." Of course, if you know the Wizard of Oz story, you know that Dorothy's great journey was only a dream. This makes it all the more a Dharma story, I think. There's a Chinese proverb that goes, "All of life is a walking dream. All of death is a going home." So pardon me for a moment. I'm going to put some eye drops in, and I invite you to do a little self-check-in. Just be few seconds. That's better. So on retreats, we often start the day by chanting the traditional refuges. And indeed, some people chant them every time they sit at home. In brief, the three refuges are Buddham, Saranam, Gacchami. I go to the Buddha for refuge. Dhammam Saranam Gacchami. I go to the Dhamma for refuge. Sangham Saranam Gacchami. I go to the Sangha for refuge. Reminding ourselves that we have these reliable refuges is like reminding ourselves to be mindful. They each have a double meaning worth reflecting upon. Taking refuge in the Buddha means living and practicing according to the example of the historical Buddha. But it also means acknowledging our own Buddha nature and taking refuge in our innate ability to wake up. Taking refuge in the Dharma refers to the collective teachings of the tradition. But Dharma can also be translated as reality, as nature, or the way things are. So acknowledging the reality of Dharma in our, of Dukkha in our lives, as well as impermanence and the impersonal nature of experience, is taking refuge in the Dharma. Seeing the interconnectedness of all beings and realizing the promise of freedom is also taking refuge in the Dharma. If awareness is present, wisdom is present. I just sat a retreat with South Bay teacher Gil Fronsdahl, and he asked the question, rhetorical question, what is it that is known by the wise? And then provided the answer, that which is a refuge, freedom, the Dhamma, which is the nature of things. Taking refuge in the Sangha can refer to our spiritual ancestors. All the monastics, the teachers, the lay practitioners going back to the historical Buddha. But Sangha can also refer to this group of us right here on Zoom this evening. Most people report that it's easier to meditate at a group than alone, and that insights often come more readily when we are sharing wisdom with each other. When I am exploring the Dharma with other practitioners, talking about Dharma, I often smile at the thought that this conversation can only happen in this community. Anyone else would look at me cross-eyed. That's the beautiful refuge of Sangha. When we gather together in a Zoom room, like at the beginning of this evening, as faces start popping up on the screen, like devas magically appearing out of nowhere, I always get the warm fuzzies. And even better when we're able to meet in person. You are my people. This is a safe place. Or as Ram Dass said, we're all just walking each other home. The Buddha invites us to be islands unto yourselves, refuges unto yourselves, seeking no external refuge, with the Dhamma as your island, the Dhamma as your refuge, seek no other refuge. It's a reminder We already have everything we need in this fathom-long body to find refuge and to wake up. We don't need great learning or years of practice or proficiency in Pali. The secret teaching of the Buddha is that a peaceful heart and mind are our natural home. Just as that Ajahn Amaro quote, the peace and ease is our natural home. I've mentioned a number of different refuges that we can tap into, but I don't want to neglect the simplest and perhaps the easiest to access, which is the breath. The breath is, of course, just another function of having a body, being in a body. But for millennia, yogis have found it to be a reliable refuge because the breath only happens in the present moment. I often start my formal meditations by focusing on the breath for a few minutes, just to ground me in the here and now. But amidst the distractions of everyday life, when I get overwhelmed by lists and projects, by crowds and complications, I know that I only have to tune into my breath for a moment in order to ground myself in the present moment and find peace. It feels like a gift, maybe more like grace. The Latin word for breath or wind is spiritus, which you may know as the word for the root word for our word spiritual. In our tradition, spiritual is not some concept or set of beliefs. Spirit is the breath, something that is ever changing, something that cannot be held on to, but nevertheless is an utterly reliable refuge, so simple that we don't trust it until we learn to make it our home. I've been living with AIDS now for 35 years, which this year is half my life. My Dharma practice preceded that virus. I went on my first retreat when I was 17 years old. And the refuge of that Dharma has often kept me grounded over the years, especially those years when AIDS was pretty scary. There were no treatments. My practice has been a refuge. It's been a still point in a turning world. I honestly don't know if I'd be alive today if it weren't for my practice. And so my gratitude knows no bounds. We have a contentious election year coming up, and it looks like it might be a bumpy ride. When the news or life feels overwhelming, you can take a deep breath. It's helpful to remind ourselves that it's not the news that feels overwhelming, but rather our reactivity to it. Making peace in the world starts with finding peace within. Again, peace is available at any moment, and we only need to remember to turn toward it. And in a moment of refuge, I always experience a moment of joy. One of my teachers, the Venerable Ananio, reminds us that the whole of the Buddha's path can be seen as a progressive refinement of joy. And finally, the ultimate refuge is Nibbana. Nibbana in Pali, Nirvana in Sanskrit, or the unconditioned. With the cessation of all attachment, aversion, and ignorance, this too is available to you. The Buddha promised I would not tell you about it if it were not possible. So I'll end with a quote from Getsumna Tenzin Palmo, an English woman who's also a Tibetan teacher, who said, "The nature of the mind has no problems. It's the only place in samsara which has no problems. It's our real island of refuge. And this is why we are trying to experience the nature of the mind, because this is the only place where there is security." So that's my talk. Thank you for your kind attention. Well, we're at the end of our time, and I've really enjoyed sharing with the Sangha, and particularly enjoy hearing your feedback. It's always my favorite part. And I'd just like to invite you to offer the merit of a practice in a maybe a different way than you're used to doing it. And that is because we're on Zoom and you can look at somebody on the screen and they don't know you're looking at them. Pick out a face on the screen. Maybe put everybody on gallery as I just did. Pick out a face on the screen and wish that person well. May you be safe from danger and harm.